It's time for Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. We've got a big show for you. We'll uncover the mystery of why there were no patches on Patch Tuesday, why there's Building 42 but no Building 41, and a tech support story going back to the days when Bill Gates still answered the phone. It's all coming up next on Windows Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and once again, time for TWiT's audience survey. We'd really like to hear from you. It's only going to take a couple of minutes, really. That's all. Just go to twit.tv/survey and let us know what you think. Your anonymous feedback will help us make TWiT even better. And thanks for your continued support.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. Episode 505, recorded Wednesday, February 15th, 2017. PocketPaul.com. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Curry, a real live robot with a great personality. Curry is available for pre-order now at heycurry.com. That's HEYKURI.com. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, work with one that has your best interest in mind. Use Rocket Mortgage for a transparent, trustworthy home loan process that's completely online at quickenloans.com/windows. And by Amazon Web Services. For companies to succeed today, they need a range of tools that most cloud vendors just don't offer. Amazon Web Services, the leading cloud service provider, listens to builders, offering more solutions than any other cloud provider. Check out podcast.aws and see how AWS lets builders build. Time for Windows Weekly, the show where we talk about Windows Weekly every week, on the week, on Wednesday, on hump day. It's halfway through the week. Except for me, because I work on the weekends. Paul Thurrott is here. He works every minute of every day, putting up fine content at Thurrott.com, THURO.com. I love that. He loves it, too.
You've started something.
It's a meme.
Yep.
It's a meme. Mary Jo Foley's here. All About Microsoft is her home, allaboutmicrosoft.com on the ZDNet. And together, they represent the power couple in
lollipop
Windows journalism.
Kids.
What?
The lollipop kids.
They represent the lollipop league. Is it guild or league?
No, actually, I think it's guild.
I think it's guild, and I think I know that because I lost a trivia contest because I put league.
Yeah.
And they said,
I
can't
said kids,
give you
but I think it's guild. Yeah, I think it's guild.
I thought it was kids. It's not kids, huh?
God, I don't know. Okay. And you know what? I don't really care.
Yeah. You can bing it.
This, you say you have big announcements.
Yeah, it's been kind of a week of announcements, wouldn't you say?
It has.
Like, well, okay. Like what?
Such as.
Fill us in, Mary Jo.
Okay, I'll take a stab at the first one, even though I wasn't there when it was announced. So yesterday at Microsoft Ignite in Australia, they announced that they're going to have a special Windows Insider program for businesses, and they're calling it WIP4, the number 4, biz. So Windows Insider program for business. And this is an interesting announcement because I kind of felt like the Windows Insider program as it exists today also included business customers. Like, they were encouraging businesses to have at least some of their people in there so that they could do some early piloting of these versions of Windows as they were being tested. But it sounds like Microsoft thinks they need to double down on that and make something very specific for the business customer. So they said the details will be coming in the coming months, like they always love to say. But they're going to be talking about things like how to onboard more business customers into the Insider program, how to give them more tools to make it easier for them to deploy these Insider builds, and ultimately, I would think, the final builds to their users. They're going to give them more surveys, more tools for analyzing what's going on with the different builds, it looks like. And I think the idea is they want to turn this into more of a community, because right now, IT pros who are in the insider program, they're just any other insider. So I feel like they're trying to make kind of a special side community for IT pros who are insiders. I don't know. That's as much about as we know about this, right?
Yeah. So the funny thing is, when this came up, as I was saying to Mary Jo earlier, privately, I'm positive that Donna Sarkar said something about this to me last year. And I went and looked at my notes and I looked at what I wrote at the time, and I don't see it. But the way I recall it being described, and maybe it was a fever dream for all I know, was that, you know, corporations with policy can put users into different groups, and that, you know, they would be able to assign a group of users to different rings of the insider program, which, you know, makes sense in the sense that that would work and all that. But I have to wonder why on earth any insider, any business would ever put a group of users into the insider program. I mean, it's by nature kind of buggy and problematic. And it seems like businesses, IT pros, you know, or IT groups and businesses are spending all of their time putting out fires and fixing problems. And it seems odd to me that there is any group, like large group of business customers that think this is a great idea.
Although, if you're a business, though, you probably do want to have some input into features that are specific for businesses as they're being built, right?
Maybe. Of course. But it seems like businesses are always a step behind anyway, right? I mean, most businesses are still on Windows 7. This is not an audience that moves quickly to the new stuff, you know?
Yeah. Barb Bowman asked me on Twitter today, she said, so what's the difference between this and the TAP, you know, technology adoption program, which a lot of businesses are already in for Windows? And I said, I don't know.
Good question.
We'd like to know, but we don't know yet. So I think it's going to be interesting to see if this catches on and kind of how this for business part differs from the regular insider program. Like, are there different kinds of rings?
Because we need more rings.
Maybe they're going to be like the Xbox rings.
Don't they? I mean, they must have some plan for IT folks who want to vet updates or vet versions of Windows before they roll them out.
Yeah.
Enterprise wide. That exists in some form or fashion, right? Mm. So does that, yeah. is this, yeah. what's it called? Yeah, I mean,
the well, TAP no, it's just a fee.
So how would this differ from that? This is, so you can be an insider or?
Well, you can just as part of deploying Windows 10 to vet updates, right? As a business, if you opt in, you know, you have to use Windows Enterprise Edition, you can stay a version behind, two versions behind, whatever. It's confusing how this really fits in with the other stuff. And maybe that's the point. You know, they were saying we're going to have more details in the coming months. Maybe the way that this fits in is going to obviate the need for something else. And maybe that's how this is going to progress.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's really not very clear.
No, it isn't.
No. But, you know, a few people have pointed out that there were some features that have come out in other versions of Windows 10 as they've been being built that you kind of wish had more hands-on time by business users.
Yes, that's an interesting.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So this could be a way.
Is a new example of that. I mean, there's a lot of stuff.
Yep. I mean, it feels like some of the bugs that got through that they patched after different versions came out, you wonder, like, okay, why didn't more people test this combination of things together? Mm-hmm. So maybe that's what it's for, too. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
But if you do want to participate, if you think you're interested in seeing what this is about, you can go to insider.windows.com/home/ITPro and fill out a short survey.
And,
what does it
and
say?
And potentially be accepted in or... Is it automatic?
I wonder if it's like that, too, or if it's just something you would sign up for.
Yep.
I don't know.
No.
A lot of don't knows so far.
Do not know.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it's coming.
Here it comes. IT Pro TV might be mad at the name. or they haven't named it.
Is it? They haven't named
it. It's not called
IT. It's just called WIP for Biz.
Oh, okay.
So far.
Whip Biz. Yeah. Whip Biz. Whippets. Call it Whippets.
Whip it good.
Build is coming.
Yeah, so we have our traditions in the Microsoft space. Every year, Microsoft announces that build registration is open, and every year, no one can register, and then it sells out.
Hey, wait a minute. I wanted to do that.
Yeah. This year was a little more painful than usual because build is later in the year, so the registration was later, I think, than usual. People were starting to freak a little bit. If you missed it...
Is it too late? It's over?
Yep.
No, but don't you go on a waiting list? And a lot of people last year got in from the waiting list too, didn't they?
Yeah, I think that's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't remember the exact error message I got yesterday, but when I tried to register it, which I don't have to do, I just wanted to see what it was like because I know the hilarity that will be ensuing. You don't often get to see plain text pages on the web, but when you do, they're usually error messages.
Yeah.
And it's usually because some kind of a server has crashed. And that's what happened.
Yeah. But this year, it's going to be in Seattle. Mm-hmm. It's May 10th through 12th, not in San Francisco this year. What else? It's at the Washington State Convention Center. There are going to be 5,000 people allowed at Build.
Which, by the way, is interesting because they always sell out. The past several shows have been 5,000 people in San Francisco at Moscone West, I think it's called. Which is probably as much as that place can hold. The Washington State Convention Center can hold 10,000 people.
So let's make it bigger.
Well, yeah, that's what Steve Guggenheimer, who is one of the main movers and shakers of Build, said yesterday on Twitter, we asked for more space, but we didn't get it this time, but maybe next time.
Interesting. So maybe there's something else there.
They tried to do it. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. We don't know what the sessions are. I've been there a couple times.
We don't know the sessions, right? No, not recently.
What does it say here? It says on the site now, you'll be hearing from leaders like Scott Guthrie and Scott Hanselman. Oh, no, that just says a dev intersection. Doesn't say a build. So, yeah, we don't know. We don't know who the keynoters are. Likely those guys. And when they were teasing registration for the show, it was interesting to see what they talked up on that list of things because they definitely didn't talk up Windows that much. They talked up more things like AI and building virtual reality and augmented reality applications, which is part of Windows. But, I mean, they didn't say like, hey, we're going to talk more about Redstone 3, which maybe they will because of the timing.
I would think so.
Yeah, me too. Are there hardware giveaways? We don't know. There have not been the past couple years at Build, but we don't know for sure yet. I wouldn't count on it either.
But, you know, I think we talked about this probably last year and maybe the year before. What they should be doing is giving away Azure credits and doing everything they can to drive developer usage of the cloud stuff. And there's no reason they can't do that. Mm-hmm. So hopefully that happens.
But we'll hear more about bots again this year, probably.
Sure.
Develop the bot developer framework like we did last year. Probably more on like cognitive services and the different AI services they're building on Azure. Pretty safe bet. What else? We don't know. We'll see.
Yeah. So when is it? The show's in what, mid to late May, basically.
Yeah. Middle of May.
So... yeah, I mean, it's about a month and a half later than usual, which is interesting timing. And I don't know if that's just because of the availability of the venue or if they wanted to wait for certain things to have happened. Like I said, we'll have to wait and see what the actual topics are.
Mm-hmm. But we'll be there. There probably will be a meetup, it's safe to say.
Yeah, and we'll be in Seattle this year, I would imagine, right? Because everyone's going to be over there.
Nice.
Yeah.
That'll be fun.
Yeah.
There's always good
beer.
Maybe
you can come, Leo.
No. When is it again?
May 10th through 12th.
I'm
pretty sure I'm doing something then.
They must have. Wow. It might be three of the sunny days they get every year.
It might be. Yeah.
I could come. I don't know. Maybe. I don't know.
It's such a short flight for you.
It would be easy. Yeah. In fact, I think we have a direct flight to Seattle from Santa Rosa just up the road a piece. So really, there'd be no excuse not to go. Damn it. There's no excuse.
Nothing occurs, but give it time, Leo.
I'll come up with something. Some reason. It's not that I don't want to see you guys. That's not it at all.
I didn't take it that way.
I did. I took it that way.
Oh, please. Love seeing you guys. I just, a trip to Seattle.
You just don't
want to
hear about bots and APIs.
Build is kind of actually of all the Microsoft conferences, that's probably the one I'd be most interested in.
Yeah.
Keep saying that, Leo. Yeah.
There'll be some Bash stuff. It will be good for you.
Bash? Will there be Bash? Oh, that's different.
There will.
If there's Linux content, I'm in.
You know how to compile in GCC inside of Bash? It's
oh, nice.
Mm-hmm. Maybe you should
exciting.
Go.
Exciting.
Compile your .NET assemblies with GCC.
Actually, here's something I'm excited about. But
yes.
Visual Studio 2017.
Mm-hmm.
Is that
announced?
Announced and with an event too.
Yeah, this one's a webcast, though. You don't have to go to it.
Yeah.
Yep. So Visual Studio 2017 is going to launch on March 7th, Microsoft said, and there's going to be a 2-day webcast. The first day is going to be the usual keynotes with the usual suspects talking about the product. Second day is a whole day of free training. You can sign up for, which is pretty cool.
And I believe Scott Hanselman is, in fact, associated with this event.
He is. Yep. Right. They're going to talk about Visual Studio, ASP.NET, the .NET Core, .NET Standard, all those fun topics.
Good.
And that day, the same day, March 7th, is the day that the code actually becomes generally available. So it's not one of those launches where they launch it and then a month goes by and then you get the product. It's going to be that day, they're saying.
Yeah, it seems like this should be getting, it almost seems like it could be ready now. I'm surprised they even need that much time.
Yeah, probably RTM very soon, right?
Good.
Yeah, I would think so.
That's exciting. That I'm excited about.
Yeah.
Why don't we take a... I'm just trying to gauge this. I think it's a good time to take a little bit of a break and then come back.
Okay.
If you want.
Okay.
Because I have questions. Well, yesterday was Patch Tuesday, but what happened?
Was it, though?
But was it?
Right.
I was waiting. You know, I just sit there waiting all day. Just waiting.
This refreshing Windows update.
Refreshing over and over again. But nothing. Our show today brought to you by my favorite little robot. Say hello to Curry, a real live robot pal that I met for the first time just a few weeks ago down at the Mayfield Robotics headquarters next to the Lexus dealership in Silicon Valley. It's actually really cool. They have all sorts of cool toys in there. There's the size of it. Curry is about knee-high to an 8-year-old. And they did that very purposely. The idea is not to scare or intimidate, but this is the first robot in your house. Your kids will love it. You will love it. Curry doesn't, and also not to scare you. It's very humanoid. It has, looks like, you know what it looks like? Rosie from the Jetsons. And it blinks, and it bloops. It doesn't talk. Now, it can read to you, it can do podcasts, it can play music, it has very good speakers in its space, but it doesn't talk as Curry the robot, and that's intentional. It just bloops and bleeps, and the reason is they don't want it to be scary or intimidating. It's a think of it as a companion robot. Curry moves around, avoids obstacles. In fact, as Curry moves around your home, it makes a map internally of your home. And then you can name things, kitchen, living room. It will not go up or down stairs, but it does have tractor treads, so it will easily go over door jams and little obstacles. Now, it makes the map, but what's cool is it also has cameras, of course, and it can see if there's an obstacle. So it will move around it automatically
it, even if it's not in the base map. When he or she is low on battery, she goes back to her dock. She can run for a few hours on a charge. And kids, you know, and I have to say, I loved her. Curry has this great idle mode where, you know, she'll wander around a little bit. She can patrol, but she'll also, she might also join a conversation and just stand there and look back and forth at the speakers. It's really kind of interesting. You can command Curry, of course. When you speak to Curry, hey, Curry, she'll look at you, she'll blink, and you can say things, I want to listen to podcasts. You can say, go check out the dog. In fact, you can do this over the internet. Because Curry has a camera that we'll put out over the internet, and she can tell you if the dog's on the couch. If she hears a loud noise, Curry will go investigate and send you pictures. These are the sounds Curry makes. That's yes. That's no. And she can also shake her head and nod. And she greets you differently every time you come home. She actually comes to the door and welcomes you. You can have her read to the kids at night as they go to bed. Face recognition, so she can distinguish between you and your other family members and even your pets. She can, and Curry is just so cute. This is the robot your kids will say, yeah, I remember. In 2017, we got our first robot. I'll never forget Curry. Gosh, I kind of miss Curry. I grew up with Curry, that kind of thing. You might want some Curry, too. Curry's just a presence in your house, just a benign, sweet presence in your house. I'll tell you how I'm going to use it. Curry could come wake me up in the morning, set the alarm, come wake me up in the morning, start playing my favorite podcast, and then I could say, follow me. And as I go and make breakfast and brush my teeth, Curry will follow me around, continuing to play my shows. You can actually pre-order Curry right now on the website. It's H-E-Y, Hey Curry, H-E-Y-K-U-R-I.com. H-E-Y-K-U-R-I.com. Be out later this year. Not a refundable deposit of $100 gets you in line. And if you decide to buy at the time of shipment, it's $5.99 plus taxes and shipping. Curry is very sophisticated. There's a lot going on in Curry that is kind of cool, kind of neat. I want you to check it out. Hey Curry, HeyKurri.com. You can even pat her on the head or him. He has a heart light, the RGB heart light that can. Actually, when you go there, check out Curry's team, because some of the smartest roboticists in the world are working on Curry. K-U-R-I. It's HeyKurri.com if you'd like to check it out or put down a deposit for your first companion robot. Curry's waiting for you. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley, we're talking Windows. And next on the agenda, what the hell happened to my patches? Actually, we talked a little bit about this yesterday on Security Now, because, of course, we talk about security patches. And Steve is theorizing, and it has to do with the SMB zero day that they discovered late in the cycle. Your thoughts? Maybe a showstopper? I mean, clearly it was a showstopper of some kind.
So Microsoft won't say what happened. All
is
they're
this
saying,
unprecedented, though? Have they ever done this
it
on
is,
the day
I believe.
Of Patch Tuesday?
Really?
I believe it is unprecedented.
Yeah, they've skipped Patch Tuesdays before, haven't they? Well, maybe not.
Maybe a long time ago. But I don't recall a time when a Patch Tuesday occurred. And on that day, they said, yeah,
we're not going to do it.
Right. So by the way, no patches.
That could lend to your idea there.
Yeah.
So all they said on their post was, we discovered a last-minute issue that could impact some customers and was not resolved in time for our planned updates. Sure. They won't say anything beyond that. I asked around to a few people yesterday, and I had people telling me they thought it was the Microsoft build system that had a problem, that it wasn't.
Oh, could be that easily, right? Yeah.
Right. But
maybe
here's
inadvertently fixed Windows 7 patching.
Yeah. Oh, right. Because that was supposed to happen yesterday too, right? Which is Microsoft was supposed to start doing some of those cumulative updates for Windows 7 and 8.1, the new roll-ups. That was supposed to take effect yesterday too. So maybe it was something with that. We don't know. But now we're on the next day, and we're past the time when the patches usually hit, if they're going to hit, and it's still not out. And there's no update to that post from yesterday. So, yeah. We don't know. We don't know when it's delayed.
So this one is fairly important because there is this SMB. Right. You can have a malformed SMB block that will give an attacker root an exploitable code on your system. And it was the security firm that discovered it had told Microsoft about it 3 months ago, and then on February 5th released the exploit in the wild. So it went 2 weeks ago, it was available. Win10.py, Laurent Gaffi. And so the thought was Microsoft would be patching it yesterday.
Yeah.
Which gives it some urgency, frankly.
Right. Yep.
But maybe, yeah, it could be a showstopper they found in the fix, right? Something bad happened. Could be the build system.
Yep.
You know, Donna Sakar came in one morning and just it had gone, you know, stopped working.
Who knows?
Yeah, pulled the plug. She said, you know, who knows? Since they're not saying, who knows?
We don't really know.
But I do think with this 0 day that there's some urgency that they get it out.
I know, you would think, right? But we don't even know when it's delayed until. Like they just said,
right,
it's delayed.
I think you also want to avoid 2 days in 1 week where you issue a bunch of these kinds of patches, right? This is a schedule IT pros rely on and so forth. Mm-hmm. It would probably be more disruptive to release a bunch of stuff and then the fix thing, if that's what it is. But yeah, we can only just wait and wonder, and we'll see how much information they supply. They're usually so transparent. I'm sure we'll find out exactly what happened.
You're being sarcastic, I can tell.
I tried to say that.
It was funny, though. I don't know if Paul was getting this. Like yesterday when this happened, people were like privately DMing me and then saying on Twitter to me, I didn't get my patches. I'm worried. Yeah. I'm like, no one got them. Nobody got them.
You're not alone, my friend.
See, I would have kept those people busy. I would have been like, what ring are you in?
Oh, you're so mean. So mean.
Nice.
Well, I don't know. I don't know. You should have. Is this patch Tuesday? I think it is. You know,
maybe, it was weird.
Yeah. I didn't realize it was unprecedented. That's interesting.
I think it is.
Me too.
And then I'm trying to decide, and maybe you can help me decide. I guess Microsoft announced that I can buy Outlook Premium now, and what is it? It's not just removing ads. I mean, that's one of the benefits, but it's more than that, right?
Yeah. In fact, it's interesting. I wonder if this doesn't take the place of that ad-free Outlook, whatever they were calling it. Basically, it's a version of Outlook.com where you get 5 email addresses off of a custom domain, which you can buy through Microsoft or go through a third party, you know, if you already own a domain. Microsoft used to offer this feature through Windows Live. Remember, they had Windows Live custom domains.
Right.
And I actually just set this up today to see if it was just the same thing all over again. But actually, intriguingly, it's actually a little bit different. So if you've ever added a custom domain to an Office 365 commercial account or to G Suite through, you know, the Google tools, you know, you have your Threat.com and you have Paul@Threat.com. You have your email addresses and all that stuff. And each of those things is an account. It's its own account. And the Microsoft one, the Outlook.com Premium is a consumer offering. So it's subtly different, but it's a very important difference because you don't create your first account with this custom domain. You actually sign into the service with your existing Microsoft account. So Therat@Hotmail.com or whatever. That is what that first account you create is associated with. It's an alias. So if I, PaulsCustomDomain.com, whatever, bought Office, Outlook Premium, that account, Paul@PaulsCustomDomain.com, is actually the same account as my Microsoft account. It's the same exact account.
Nice.
It's actually shared. So you could log into Windows Store, you could log into Xbox, whatever, with either account. It's the same account. So if you have services associated with your Microsoft account, if you have apps and games you bought on whatever platform, if you have movies and TV shows and music and whatever, it doesn't matter which one you sign in with. People who have done email forwarding in the past or use, I guess, even aliases, but let's say email forwarding, know that Outlook.com or Hotmail back in the day had kind of a problem with that, where you could send an email as a different account, and it would say on behalf of, you know, in the you know, in the code behind the email, which was kind of goofy. And I looked at this today, and it's not like that. It's just a normal Outlook.com alias. So if I send an account from Paul at, you know, paulscustomdomain.com, it comes from that account. That's what it looks like. Email goes, you know, comes and goes to that account. So it's a little interesting. If you're used to how custom domains work at other services, including Microsoft's, right, on the commercial side, this is different. It's a little different. If you invite other people, if I invite Mary Jo or my wife or somebody to be part of paulscustomdomain.com, they will have to sign in with their Microsoft account first. There's no such thing as a custom domain as its own Microsoft account. It's always associated with another Microsoft account. And I guess the theory there is if you were to stop paying Microsoft for the account, which you can do, right? Obviously, you could have a one-year subscription and give it up. You won't lose anything, because if you bought Office 365 that year, or you bought some game on the Windows Store, you bought music from Groove or whatever, it will always be associated with the underlying Microsoft account. You'll never lose it. So it's kind of an important. I think that's the rationale behind it. But that is how it works. And the reason I have to say I think is because they never announced it. They just one day it was just available.
So that was the weirdest part of this whole thing, right? Yep. Like it. Yep. We knew this was in private preview since last year. Then it went to public preview, which they also didn't announce last fall. And then suddenly the preview tag is gone. And I asked them, you know, so, hey, when did this become a finalized service? And they said, we have no comment. What?
That's odd. So popular, it markets itself, Mary Jo. I don't even know why you had to ask.
And also U.S. only still, right? Although I think that's I think if you're in another country, I saw some people saying they logged in.
I also heard from those people. So I've also heard from people that weren't able to make it work. So I think there's something goofy with Microsoft accounts where, depending on when you created it, they didn't used to have country specific accounts and stuff. And it's back in the day, maybe someone logged into the U.S. site and got an account and they, you know, it's hard to say exactly. It is supposed to be U.S. only. I don't think I have this as a, let me look at my tips here today. Yeah. So the one thing you should know too, is if you have any interest in doing this, do it right now, because now through the end of March, this costs $20 per year. If you sign up for it after that, it's going to cost $50 a year. $20 a year is amazing. And it appears to be perpetual.
Oh, so you get it's not just this first year.
Yeah, the language that they use says you will you'll get it again for $20 a year next year. The other thing to know is if you do register a domain through Microsoft as part of the wizard when you set up the account, it's probably a lot simpler. I actually went with a domain I already owned, so it was one of those grueling things where you enter MX records and stuff at your registrar. It took about 30 minutes. I'm just not very good at that kind of thing. But I assume it's going to be easier because, you know, Microsoft will do it for you. It will cost $10 a year extra for that. But $10 a year is about average for a domain name, right? If you went to Namecheap or something and bought a domain right now, typically it would be, you know, a .com or .net or whatever, would probably be about $9.99. So that's not a bad rate. So you can get locked in for $20 or $30 depending on how you're going to do it. You know, if you have any, if you want to get your family, you know, like throughoutfamily.com or, you know, some kind of family domain or whatever it might be, this isn't a bad deal.
Yeah, I might do it just to own it.
And you get a shared OneDrive too. I haven't looked into this yet, but the Microsoft account I'm using has an associated Office 365 home account. So I have I have 10 terabytes, but I really have 1 terabyte, you know, once that grandfathering thing ends, of storage associated with Office 365. The shared OneDrive account, I don't know if that's another terabyte or if it's just like a, you know, whatever OneDrive is at today, 7 or 15 or whatever. I do not know, but I should try to figure that one out. I looked at it on the web, but I couldn't figure it out.
Because when you use Office 365 Home, don't you get a separate OneDrive for each person who's part of it?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So, it's weird because you can mix and match this. Like I could literally offer you an account on this domain and it wouldn't cost me anything, right? Because you can put 5 people on it. But let's say you would use it like a normal family. So maybe it's like me, my wife, and my two kids, and we share Office 365 Home. So that's $99 a year. And as part of that $99 a year, each of those accounts, each of those people gets their own 1 terabyte of OneDrive storage, right? Mm-hmm. So now I sign up for a domain, and everyone in my family changes their account over to this new domain. They can still use their old account, but they're going to use the new domain. In addition to that 1 terabyte, we all get access to a shared OneDrive. The idea being that Microsoft has set up a sharing for us, and that we can put stuff in there that all of us can access.
Oh, right. Mm-hmm.
And I just don't know how big that one is. I'm going to guess. I shouldn't guess. I don't know. I can't tell. I haven't been able to see it yet. But yeah, there is a shared OneDrive of some capacity, whatever it might be.
Okay. Yeah, I might, for $20, if it were perpetual, that's cheaper than most mail forwarding services.
Yeah, I mean, something like Google, like G Suite is, I think it's $60 per user per year, right? This is $20 for 5 users.
Yeah.
For a custom domain.
I'm going to do that, actually.
Yeah, it's a good deal.
And so I can use it. So you did it the MX Record way. So, for instance, right now I pay Hover for email mm-hmm. service at leoville.com, and all it is a forwarder.
Yeah, so if you want to
I could
use
do it
that
way,
address,
right?
Right. Well, remember though, it's only up to 5 accounts total. That's the one thing. You can't go
Well, and I think that's what I do because I have every
okay.
family.
So if you know you're never going to go above that. This is an incredible deal. The email is outlook.com, which is really Exchange, which means that you can
So now you have an Exchange server.
Essentially, it's a consumer service, but it's an Exchange backend.
But you set it up as Exchange, not IMAP or POP. You set it up as
it's not IMAP or POP exactly. So sometimes they'll have an outlook.com specific thing, but you can set it up as Exchange. Yeah.
Interesting. And it's going to be the store. Because actually, I do want to, because all I'm doing now is forwarding Gmail. But so this would be if I were going to replace my Hover mm-hmm. forwarding and my Gmail account, because I would use Outlook. But if you wanted to use an Exchange server, this would be a good way to do it. If you had more than 5 accounts. What happens if I exceed 5 accounts? Do I pay per seat?
No, you can't. You just can't do
you
it.
You just can't.
It's designed to be it's a consumer service. If you need more than that, you have to go to business. But the problem is on the Office 365 business side, which I also do, by the way. With a custom domain, the prices vary, but they don't go down very far. I mean, the one that I do, I believe, is either $100 or maybe $120 a year, but it's per user, right? So I only have 1 user on that account. It would be incredibly expensive to have 5 users on Office 365. I think it's called Business Premium or whatever.
Right.
It's worth it to me to have one. But
yeah,
you pay per seat, exactly.
So this is actually – here's a use case. You want to have a family email system.
Yeah, exactly.
And,
exactly.
You've got 4 kids or 3 kids and a wife and a husband. That's 5 people. Each of them can have a dedicated address at therot.com or whatever it is.
Yep. And enough for one of the cats.
And one left over. And then they could go to outlook.com with that address, which would then be tied to their Microsoft account at some point,
that's
right?
That's right. Yeah. That's exactly right. Yep.
So their new Microsoft account could be Stephanie at therot.com. Yep. And because it's Exchange, she could use any client on mobile or desktop to fetch the mail from outlook.com.
Yeah, although, I will say, as of today, this is a known issue. If you go to Outlook Mobile on iOS at least, and probably on Android too, you can sign in with this new account, right? Paul at paulscustomdomain.com, whatever it is.
Right.
You use the same password that you use on your Microsoft account. If you have 2-step authentication, you do this. Use the same Microsoft Authenticator app or whatever Authenticator app, however you do it, to get through the security. But on the mobile app, it's weird because the aliases all show up in a list because you want to be. You have this notion of default account, right? And so if you're using a custom domain, you probably want that to be the account. But you also want to be able to hit the from button and have a list come down of all the possible aliases that are available. Because in addition to your custom domain and your main Microsoft account, you might have created other aliases within Outlook.com's, web interface.
Right.
For mailing lists or, whatever. There's a bug in the mobile app today in Outlook Mobile where each of those entries, even though they are different account names or email addresses, I guess, they all appear as your Microsoft account email address, so you can't tell which one is which. They're going to fix that, but that's just a temporary bug in the mobile app. But you could use, I think you can sign into Exchange with Gmail on mobile. You could use whatever apps are compatible with Exchange would work. Yeah.
I think this is a good deal. If you wanted an exchange, I mean, look, you couldn't do a hosted Exchange server for that little $20 a year. Yeah.
Yep. I mean, you don't get like lots of business. You don't get any of the business stuff, right? Like with Office 365 commercial accounts, you're getting, you know, SharePoint and right. Skype for Business and all, you know, whatever. Skype, you can get Skype minutes and stuff. But this is really kind of an interesting thing. And it's something that's been missing for a while. What you want is custom domains. That's it. It's custom domains.
And you don't have to buy the domain from Microsoft, which is $10 a year. You could, if you have a domain, just...
Which is what I did.
You change the DNS records for the domain to point to Microsoft, to Outlook.com.
Yeah, I will say, you can do it. I know you're going to be able to handle it, but...
Yeah.
Well, and people are saying, anyone listening to this podcast will have no problem.
If you've never changed a DNS record...
Oof. And the thing is, like...
It's not that hard,
But it's brutal because you Google it. The problem is Microsoft says, here's the name, here's the ID, here's the address. But and then the field names are completely different in the registrar's site.
And
so
it's probably more than just an IP address. You probably also have some text fields and authenticating fields and things like that.
Yeah, you have a CNAME, a text, and an MX record you have to change. Yeah. And it is a lengthy process. I took a screenshot of every single step of this.
Oh, good. And this is on your site.
I didn't publish it because it was so awful. I was like, no one's going to want to look at this.
There are those of us who've done it. I mean, I've done it many times. I have many.
Right. So I've done this before for different. I've done it for Gmail. I've done it for Office 365 commercial. It's never fun for me. I'm not very good at it. But I think people, like I said, technical people probably, you know, they'll be okay. The problem, I guess, is normal people. What they'll want to do is buy it through Microsoft,
right?
Because I haven't tried it, but there's no way, you know. They're going to configure all that stuff for you. So you just type in the domain you want. They tell you if it's available. If it is, you can get it and you're done. And I think that's how it's going to work. And that will be great for normal people.
I also use Fastmail, which is a commercial IMAP provider. That's actually my main email provider. And they will also do hosted custom domain names. I don't even know what the limit is as part of your deal. But you're paying for really a email service, and it is definitely more than $20 a year. It's an IMAP email service.
So, yeah, I mean, by the way, so this
is there a limit on the amount of mail you can store there on Outlook?
No, it's effectively unlimited. They won't say it like that, but it's effective. I think it is either effectively or literally unlimited.
And do the other features of the Exchange server, like contacts and calendar, work or no?
Yeah, but so yes, So you do get all that.
That's a pretty good deal.
Yeah, it's whatever you get.
I'm going to do it just because I want to have it, and maybe I'll use it, maybe I won't. But $20, you know.
So have you switched over to the new Outlook.com? Do you even use Outlook.com?
I have. It is switched over now. You'd have to.
If you look at your Microsoft,
you have to be switched over to the Outlook.com.
Yeah, there's all kinds of crazy little caveats to this service, unfortunately.
You see the black bar? That means I'm now. One of you. Yeah.
So if you look at, if you click on that blue thing up in the corner, the little grid, you can see like people, which is contacts, calendar, tasks.
Oh, this is all part of it anyway.
It's all part of it. And so this will all be associated.
But is it in the Exchange server as well now? I mean, in other words, if I use Outlook desktop, would my calendar, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
Yep.
That's nice. I think that's a good feature.
Yeah. It does get rid of ads too, you know, so you can get rid of the ads.
Well, I'm using an ad blocker, so
they're not happy about that. but you're wasting a little bit of space over there, right?
Yeah,
because it says, hey, you're using an ad blocker.
So, and it does give me a link. Say, go here for ad-free Outlook. Is this the same thing?
No, but by the way, it's the same price, and you get so much
more.
That's
confusing. Yeah,
right.
Yeah. So I don't do this.
No.
Okay, and Paul does have an article on his site at therot.com on how to sign up for the new $19.95 Outlook. And as far as anybody can tell, it says will renew at $19.95.
Yeah, it literally says that. Yeah, so I don't know how long, but even if you get a couple of years at $20, it's crazy. That's such a crazy price.
Yeah, I like it.
Maybe that's why they didn't want to, make a big deal out of the fact that it was available.
We just did.
Well, sorry, guys.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Right. Because normally it's $49.95, right?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Which, by the way, is still incredibly reasonable for five accounts. Yeah. I mean, you know, like I said, like a Google Apps or G Suite account, it's I believe it's $50 or $60 per user per year. You know, getting five accounts for $50, it's like that's, you know, for family, that's very reasonable.
If you use this, you're going to have like lots of friends come over and give you a cake, apparently, right, according to Paul's website.
Allow me to break through the mystery of how I choose the images for these articles.
Randomly, would that be?
No, that's what people think. But this image is from an Outlook.com promo video of Microsoft. So I try to choose one for that. An image from a video they used.
That's pretty funny.
Premium
all
Outlook.
The
that's
young
funny.
People. Yeah. So this is where I should go. This is the article to tell me how to do this.
Yeah, this is the one where I actually used it and explained like how this works. Okay, it's basically the discussion we just had.
Yeah.
Yep. Written down. In fact, I was just reading from it. I hope that's not a problem. I'm kidding.
I'm going to do this right now. Yeah.
I'm just curious about this one, this shared space thing. I don't quite.
Well, that could be OneDrive. So it could be tied to your OneDrive capacity then in some way. That's what Google does with Gmail, right?
Yeah, but it seems like they should.
Did they say anything in the FAQ? There was an FAQ for this whole thing.
Yeah,
too.
I might have just not seen it. I'm not really sure. Yeah, the dashboard for this is extremely minimal. It's actually almost comic. There is really nothing to. This is not much to manage. You know, it's very, it's very basic. Yeah, I don't know. I'll keep looking at it.
Well, thank you for the write-up, though. This is helpful. And I do think this seems like a very good deal.
Yeah, I do, too.
Yeah. Okay. I guess I should stop signing up and pay attention to the show now. do you want to talk about the Outlook calendars working now with your Echo? And notice I say Echo, not that other word.
That other word.
Yeah, we have a new policy here on the Twit Podcasts to avoid, when possible, trigger words. Mm. I think we're going to have to start doing trigger word alerts.
Yeah, exactly.
You could bleep us out if we.
We do actually, and some of the shows we actually have a bleep for that. Because you know what happened, and actually it's kind of embarrassing. Apparently, I bought a number of Echoes. By accident on people who are listening because I walked through the Echo purchase process or something.
That's
actually
amazing.
Somebody wrote an email to the new screensaver saying, hey, knock it off. You bought me an Echo. And so I said, oh, I don't think that's possible because in order to do that, I would have to say, and then I would have to say yes at exactly the right time. And unless you haven't turned on the pin, I guess some people have not turned on the pin. Anyway, I walked through it and apparently bought more Echoes.
That's awesome.
So, I apologize if I bought anybody an Echo, but you're going to love it. Another Echo because they didn't have to have a first one in the first place. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Anyway, don't say what this is, but say the Echo word.
This is tricky. Okay. So up until recently, you could easily connect your Google Calendar to your Echo.
Yeah.
But now you can connect your Outlook.com or Office 365 Outlook or Hotmail, too, I think, to Echo, which is great for all the people who use Microsoft products with their
Echo.
I'm making sure I'm not saying the word
Echoes. Echo. Echoes, okay. And you would go and see. Now, here's the problem. The name of the app is the A word. So we're going to say, go into your Echo app.
Alicia.
Yes. Alicia.
Alicia. That's
hey,
good.
Alicia. I know some people named the A word, and it's a real problem.
Yeah.
Anyway, so go into the app. I presume I'm making this up as I go along, but I presume if you go into the app, you can turn on, or do you have to do that? You have to turn on the Outlook calendar, right? Probably have to. Is it a task?
It looks like you go in, select the calendar.
Oh, you can log in. Okay, good.
Yeah.
Good.
And good. So that's nice. You can't do that with the other because there are no Echo equivalents with Cortana yet, right? So one day when somebody makes one of those,
yep,
you'll be able to do that too.
We'll all be using these Amazon things, whatever they're called.
They'll be everywhere. They'll be everywhere.
Yeah.
Now, okay. Do I have to choose a personalized email address to sign up for this?
Yes, you do.
Yes,
you do. You either have to own one already or be willing to choose one during the process.
I see. Oh, I see. A little down below. Use my own domain name.
Yeah, you're like, if you were to sign up for an Office 365 commercial account, by default, what you get is a something dot on Microsoft account.
Right.
And then you can add domains to it. You could add multiple domains, in fact. And then you could also get rid of that on Microsoft account, which you should. But the point of that is you don't actually have to be ready with the custom domain at sign up, which, you know, makes sense for a business or whatever. But yeah, if you're an individual or family doing this, you need to be ready to roll with a new domain.
Yeah, I have to think about this because I don't know if I want LaportFamily.net.
Yeah, which, by the way, they suggested that by default, didn't they?
Yeah,
that's
the default.
So, because for me, it was like Throughout Family, right? Because they're trying to emphasize.
It's a family affair. It's a family affair. All right. Let's take a break, and then Windows 10 news. We're going to the cloud and Microsoft Xbox One news featuring Paul Theriot and a snoozing Mary Jo Foley.
I have an extra Xbox item, too, to add. I'm so sorry.
Oh, I love them. Keep them coming.
I just added one for you.
Oh, Mary Jo, see?
Oh,
you're
this
an
is
enabler.
The thing I was
going to
add. Yeah, yeah. Sorry.
She's an enabler.
Yeah, I was just invited to this. I think I'm going to go to this. But we'll get to that.
Oh, man, what a tease.
Mary Jo, I'd like you to
come
with.
You want me to go? No.
Will you be my date at the Xbox event?
Come on.
Somebody's telling me that Microsoft is, I can't believe this, using GoDaddy
as the registrar. They have been using GoDaddy.
Yeah, which means, and this is not good news, that because GoDaddy makes you pay extra for Whois privacy. Be aware of that. You may want to actually get a domain somewhere where they have Whois privacy, like our sponsor, Hover.com, and then which would be the same price, and then and use that one. But you'll have to mess with that MX record.
Yep. Listen. Grab a bottle of wine and just plan on spending a good hour doing it. It'll be a lot of fun.
What fun.
You'll be Googling a lot.
You know, if you were to apply for a home loan at Rocket Mortgage at the same time as you started this MX record, you'd be getting the loan faster than you'd be getting the domain name all set up. That's what I love about Rocket Mortgage. It's a brand new product from Quicken Loans. Quicken Loans is the number one mortgage lender. I mean, the best mortgage lender in the country. And just look at their JD Power customer satisfaction awards, and you'll see that that's, you know, year after year been true, both as a loan originator and for servicing. So, you know, it's a great experience, but they've made it even better for people like us, the geeks who want to do it all online. And you don't have to mess with DNS. You just go right now to quickenloans.com/windows. And within minutes, you can get approved for a custom mortgage solution tailored for your financial situation. You can submit all the paperwork on your phone with a touch of a finger so that this all is a smooth, friction-free process. You can customize the rate, the term, all of that very easily and get that approval so fast that you could do it at an open house and hold up the phone and say, see, we're pre-approved. Refinances, too, and now's a good time. Interest rates... It's pretty clear. I'm just, you know, looking at what Janet Yellen said yesterday. They're going to be going up. They're going to be going up. So now's the time, if you're going to refi, to lock in the current interest rates. Skip the bank, skip the waiting, and do it completely online. Because you're a geek. We know that. Go to quickenloans.com/windows for Rocket Mortgage, equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. quickenloans.com/windows. Paul Theriot and Mary Jo Foley, they're talking Windows and Windows 10. What's the news? Project Neon.
You do the first one because I don't care about this at all.
Wow. Wow. Mary Jo. No Hadoop in there?
Yeah, no. Well, last week, Microsoft held what appeared to be an impromptu developer event online. They didn't really warn anybody it was coming, to my knowledge. But they had Well, you know, I would have paid more attention to it if I had known it was happening. Anyway, as part of that, they actually teased something that has been rumored for some time now, that with the next version of Windows, not the one that's coming out this March or April, but the one that's coming out in the fall, RS3 or Redstone 3, will feature a new user interface for the first time in a long time, actually. I mean, Windows 10 today is basically just a minor evolution of what they first introduced in Windows 8. And so they're finally giving it kind of a spit shine or whatever. And it's currently called Project Neon, but they showed off a prototype or whatever screenshot kind of thing to give us an idea of what it's going to look like. And it's going to look like an Easter egg, basically, kind of a pastel-y looking thing. But I think Mary Jo, I think when this was first rumored, if I remember correctly, you wrote something about the evolution of Microsoft's user experiences, right?
So I did.
You're obviously not impressed by this.
Right. So this is actually the third. I know something about it, but you know, the reason I'm joking about it is whenever I see screenshots of this Project Neon, I'm like, okay, so what's different? I don't notice anything different.
You don't see color, is what you're saying.
I see new colors. Okay. But I'm like, is that like what everybody's talking about? Because some people are like, no, it's the blurring. Like they used to have an arrow. And I'm like, okay. Is this something huge? I don't know. Like to me, I just don't notice design that much. So for me, this is just a non-starter. Like when they were showing screenshots of the leaked design from the event last week, I'm like, I don't even see what they're showing me. I don't see what's different. It looks the same as anything looks to me right now.
Yeah. So the one unknown here is if they're going to consolidate what today are a bunch of different UIs. And so you can do some goofy stuff in Windows 10 right now where you put on the dark theme. Some of the apps don't convert to dark automatically. Yeah. You have to manually switch them over. And then there are UIs that can't switch over because they're legacy UIs like Windows Explorer and the control panel where most of your screen is all black or really dark. And then these windows just pop up as these really bright white kind of areas. And so aside from the design, which is subjective, obviously, My hope with this thing is that they at least make it consistent across all of the UIs that you can see in Windows. So
we
shall see.
Yeah. That's all I have to say about Neon.
Yep.
I'm like, okay, yeah, it's coming. Probably not till Redstone 3 is the common conjecture, right? Like that's when people will first really start seeing it.
It's not going to be for this coming release, that's for sure.
Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Great.
Okay, tell me about dynamic lock screen, though. Like, why you think this is a gigantic mess?
Well, okay. Depending on the platform, you can do things like by the proximity of a device, an Apple Watch, an iPhone, a Microsoft Band, or whatever, do things like automatically unlock the system or automatically lock it when you go away. Windows doesn't have any of this. So starting with Redstone 2, which is coming out in a few weeks or a couple months or whatever, they are adding a feature called Dynamic Lock, which is half of that equation. It's the locking part of it, not the unlocking part of it. Okay. And the way it works is if you have a Bluetooth device that is paired to your PC and you bring it away from your PC, after 30 seconds, your PC will lock, which, you know, is fine. It sounds great, right? Like, this is a great idea. So here's what's missing. You can't configure which device causes this. So you might have five Bluetooth devices paired to your PC. If you walk away with one of them, will it lock? It's not clear, right? Mm. Why isn't there a list where you say, I want my iPhone to be the one, you know? There's a bug in the current build where you can't actually pair a Bluetooth device using the settings app, but you can get around that. That's not a big deal. Mm. The other issue is the 30-second timeout. I mean, ideally, in my house, I don't have a very big house, but I can walk from here to the far end of the house downstairs, which is the kitchen, and Bluetooth is still connected, right? So I can't disconnect. It won't disconnect. But let's say
it doesn't disconnect when you get up, right? It has to be like 30 seconds after you're out of range.
Out of range. And Bluetooth range is not that big, right? It's like a personal area network. It's probably, I don't remember the exact number.
It's 100 feet, 30 meters.
It's 100 feet. Well, actually, that's pretty big. That's bigger than
supposedly. Well, but it, you know,
doesn't go through. I mean, there are things like walls and stuff that will, you know, help to break the connection. I believe I triggered this by walking outside one time. The way I've been triggering it during testing is just to turn off Bluetooth on the device, right? Which is kind of cheap, but it's kind of just a way to see if it's working. What I would like is, in addition to choosing which device, or I guess devices trigger this effect, how about a timer choice? Like, I want it to happen immediately, right? Because ideally what really happens is you step up from your computer and you walk away, and Windows Hello notices that you're not there anymore, and it just logs you out. Like, that would be a way more secure system than this. Like, this is, it's nice. I'm glad they're doing it. It needs some work. And maybe, and by the way, it's not complete. This is a Windows Insider feature. It just debuted last week. You never know. They could be literally adding this stuff. But I talked to Raphael about this, and I'm hoping, like today maybe or tomorrow, sometime this week, he's going to publish an article, because he actually dug into this and found out that you can, in fact, impact which device triggers it and how long the timeout is. So, like, that stuff's available. It's just not in the UI. So I don't know if he's writing an app to make that happen or what he's doing exactly, but he has looked into it, and this stuff is at least possible. Mm-hmm. So today it's a mess. Maybe it gets better.
You've used Android's lock, right? Bluetooth unlock.
Oh, yeah. I know. In fact,
and that works pretty well.
Yeah.
But so you have to tell it it's a trusted device.
Yeah. Yep.
And it won't, and you don't have to, it doesn't always have to be.
And it's not completely automatic, which I like. So in other words, you open your Chromebook and you have your Android phone with you. That is the device lock paired or whatever it's called. And you just click your picture and then you log in. Right. Mm-hmm. That's good. Like that's fine. I like that. I don't know about the lock part of it. I don't know if Android has, Chrome OS has like an auto lock.
Let me think about that.
I don't think so, but.
It does, because when it but see, this is a difference between a mobile device and a desktop. Yeah. In a mobile device, when the screen goes off.
No, I mean, if you walk away with your trusted device, like in other words,
I understand, and so it's unlocked until the screen goes off.
Yeah, and it locks. So,
but on mobile devices, that's usually a minute or two. It's not very long.
Everyone listening to this already knows this, but here's a little tip: Windows key plus L. Just. If you want your computer to lock when you walk away, Windows key plus L.
Yeah. Where did I just see that they're adding automatic locking? Auto lock. Yeah.
It seems like these are one half of the full story, both of these things, right? Like, if you do one half of it, it seems like you will be doing the other half, right? Because you can see the value of both. It's odd to me that Microsoft started with this feature. I think, remember, Mary Jo, they talked, they were briefly going to use Microsoft Band for this purpose.
Yeah,
by the way, it would still work because it works with any Bluetooth device. Right. So if you pair a Microsoft Band, you could use it in this capacity.
But I thought with the Band, weren't they going to let you unlock or lock?
Yeah.
Like you were able to do either one.
Yeah, right? They've been talking about it, right? So it was kind of surprising when they added this feature, because it just seemed like this wasn't going to make it. And it's weird to me that the creators update will almost certainly just ship with half of it. And if it ships the way it is now, it's not just half of it. It's like half of it poorly implemented, which is goofy. And I hope they don't do that.
Yeah. Don't forget, though, once they start rolling out creators update, they'll be rolling out fixes constantly to it like they did with the other one. So they'll have time to fix it.
But it's a, you know, it's a UI feature in the settings app. Is that the type of thing that they change over time, or does that wait for the next version of Windows?
Yeah, good
Windows
question.
10? I don't know. I mean, I wish they could.
Or did they say sometime in the next couple of weeks? Oh yeah, so that was in testing with insiders, but it's actually not going to make it into the final.
Yeah, I mean,
they could do
you
that.
Only have to look at it for 10 seconds to see the problem, because you can't see how does it know what, you know, and I tested this to try to really figure it out. You know, I connected my Fitbit to it and I connected my iPhone to it. And if I walk away with just one of them, will it trigger the locking, and it, I really can't say with certainty that I understand how it works.
Right.
Oh, that's not true. It works poorly. That's not what I would say.
So I just, the first step is to take your existing domain name and add a text record to it, which I did.
I knew you were working on that.
Yeah, you could tell, huh? And that was pretty easy. But then I guess I'm going to have to add an MX record just to get the mail forwarding from it to it.
Not at the top of my head, I don't remember, but you do some little bit of domain registration stuff in the beginning. Then you
fill out the text,
credit card information.
Yes, that's where I am
and
now.
Then
you
do, you got to do more of it.
There'll be MX stuff. I've done this before.
There's a CNAME and an MX record you have to do and a text record.
Wait a minute. Please make sure. Oh, no. Okay. That you have not purchased this service yet in other countries or regions. No, I haven't. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Sorry.
It's funny. They ask you at one point. There's a wizard. There's like 200 steps.
There's a lot of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of stuff.
At least they walk you through it. You know, it's not bad.
They walk you. There's a point, though, where they say, we need to verify that you actually own this domain. And I'm thinking, this is interesting.
Text record, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So what you do is it's kind of a dummy DNS record, and then you can just then do a who is or a dig on the DNS and say, oh, good, he controls this domain because he was able to add this text record to the domain. That means he controls it. And that's what they're trying to verify initially. You know, you can't just set this up with somebody else. I have so many domains, you know.
Yeah. I was sharing some of my domains with Mary Jo this morning. I have some really stupid domains.
Oh, I have the worst. I have, if anybody wants it, tunic time. Because briefly we thought we were going to get in the tunic business.
That's awesome.
I also have fancy pants, but, you know.
Fancy pants is an awesome domain
that's
name.
Good. Maybe that should be my new email, leo@fancypants.com.
No, that's a really good name.
Oh, I have some fun ones. Yeah.
Yeah. I have pocketpaul.com.
Pocket Paul. I love it.
I have paulofduty.com.
Is that going to be Paul of Duty?
Yep.
Paul, you got Duty. Some good ones.
Oh, man.
That's really good.
I used to have crazy Microsoft Rumors, but I sold that one.
Oh, that's good.
It was a good one. Yeah.
You sold
it? I had some
it?
Like Redmond and Microsoft.
Well, I sold it off.
Names.
I didn't want it.
Yeah.
Pocket Paul.
That's pretty fun.
That ain't Paul in your pocket.
That's a good name.
Yep.
Pocket Leo, is it too late? There's no alliteration though. You want the alliteration? All right, I'll pause my purchase to continue on. Sorry about that.
Oh, that's good.
Cortana reminders go live.
Yay! A year later, after Microsoft
they promised before, huh?
Yeah,
like,
but you know they talked
year
about
ago.
It a year ago, right? They said we're going to make it so if you agree and you send an email or receive an email that has a time commitment in it, like I'm going to finish this blog by the end of today, the Cortana will come up and say, do you want me to put a reminder in for you to ask you, did you finish the blog today?
Right.
So they're starting to roll this out now. It uses, under the covers, Microsoft says it uses machine learning techniques that help them.
It uses Scroogle techniques.
Scroogled.
You have to agree to this and you have to allow it. It's not just going to happen is my understanding, which is good because if they didn't have this as a permission-based thing, I think they would get in trouble. Starting to roll out in the U.S. on Windows 10, support for iOS and Android in the coming weeks. So don't be alarmed if you don't have it yet. And it works with Outlook.com, Office 365 work and school email addresses. They said other email services will be supported soon also, but they didn't say which email services.
I asked them that, and Gmail will be included. They basically said they want this to work broadly across all the popular services.
Okay.
Yep. And so by the way, this works pretty well.
Did you try to get this to work and you couldn't?
No, you're thinking of something else. This one I did get to work.
Okay.
This works. Like, this actually works. And this goes back to that conversation I had with Ryan Gavin back in January where I said, look, you guys are getting killed by this Amazon thing whose name should never be spoken, by, you know, Siri on mobile or Google Assistant on mobile, whatever. You know, when are you going to kind of step it up? And They appear to be not afraid, but what they were talking about was obviously an emphasis on productivity, but more important, making this thing so important to everyone's everyday lives that you really miss it when it's not around, like an actual personal assistant. And we've all done this, and we've all had this done to us, where it's like right before the holidays, you're like, listen, I'm going to be away for a couple of days. I'll get back to you on this. And then you never follow up. Not because you're a jerk and you lied, but because, you know, life is busy and you forgot. And that's what happens.
Or you're a jerk and you lied. Let's leave that open, too.
Okay. We'll leave that open as a possibility. Fair enough. Okay. But the point is, it will come. It will see that in your email, that kind of language. Mm-hmm. And that's where the machine learning comes in.
Right.
And then Cortana will prompt you and say, hey, you told Bob you were going to get back to him on this report thing. Do you want to make a reminder about that? And because Cortana is on all your devices, it can work on, you know, your Windows 10 PC. And in the it doesn't actually pop up automatically, but it will on Android, iOS, or Xbox, or wherever else Cortana is. If you do make a reminder on your Windows 10 PC, which you can do right now, that reminder shows up everywhere Cortana is, of course, because that's how reminders work in Cortana. So, you can kind of talk about what you're trying to do with Cortana, as Microsoft does, and you can talk about how you need it to be really essential and important and all that kind of stuff. But when you see something like this, you can see the reality of the possibility of it. You know, that, this is a real need. Like, this is a good idea.
Or you get really mad at Cortana because she keeps bugging you about all the things you don't do.
Cortana reminded me on Monday that Valentine's Day was coming up.
That was so sweet. Did she
that was
want
timely.
Like flowers? Did she want something?
No. She wanted to see if I wanted to buy flowers or book a restaurant or do something like that.
I think that's kind of cool. That's good.
I do too. I think that should have come maybe 2 weeks earlier because I don't know if you've been following how busy restaurants are on Valentine's Day, but the day before Valentine's is not the time to book that restaurant.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a good idea. That's a good example of, you know, my reaction is probably the same as Mary Jo's, where I see those types of pop-ups and I react in a fairly visceral way. In a Sean Connery kind of way. And my first thought is, where do I go to turn this off?
I know. Stop bugging me.
But the thing is, honestly, I mean, notifications exist for a reason and done properly. Like that's, you know, it's a good idea.
You know, I don't use Cortana that much, but I did when you first could start setting reminders, I did try it once and I set it up to on my phone. I set it up to next time I'm at Fairway, remind me to buy milk. So I walk into Fairway and the reminder pops up and I'm like, oh, it worked. I was like so stunned, you know.
That's amazing. And that's great. Like it's using location services. Yeah. It's a good example of why Cortana makes sense on a phone, right? It's not enough to have it on your PC. That's great. Now, the problem is when these things don't fire, right?
Yeah.
If you're counting on them. Grow to rely on this thing.
I know. Right.
As you might. And then you walk into that store and it doesn't remind you. And then you get home and you're like, what the fuck? that could be aggravating. Which, by the way, explains my entire relationship with technology.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I've set it all up now, and anytime anybody wants to send anything to, I probably should.
Fancy pants.
Fancy pants.
Leo at fancy pants.
Yeah.
that was an amazing.
It was. It was another two text records because there's also a reverse lookup record for SPF, and then there's the CNAME. And there's an MX.
Yeah,
so you're right. It's quite a few things to do.
You got to go through it. Yeah.
But I really like, they walk you through it quite, standardly.
Now, what's your domain registrar?
Hover.
So you probably do this enough that this didn't even throw you, but.
The labels are different. Microsoft calls it one thing and Hover calls it another thing.
See, what they should do is say, which one are you using?
Yeah.
And then use the right labels.
This is how it's
that
called.
That would have helped enormously. Yeah. You know? Mm. Yeah. For me, I mean, I'm just.
No.
I do this.
And
so
if you don't do it every day, if you don't do it every day, it's you do.
Yeah.
But I've been through all of this before. So.
Yeah. To me, it's always like the first time. Yeah.
Have Cortana remind you.
Yeah. What's the C name again? Yeah.
And what is Focused Inbox? I like Focused Inbox. That's the thing where.
Yeah.
What?
Now remember when this? So this debuted in Acompli before Microsoft bought it.
Right.
In fact, I think I.
That's how I know.
Acompli is kind of interesting because it's a lot like that giant anti-spyware thing from back in the day, where I kind of came onto it at some point, fell in love with it, recommended it, and then Microsoft bought it like immediately afterwards.
Right.
You know, coincidentally.
Yeah.
But so the big feature of the Acompli app, aside from the fact that it looked and worked like Outlook because it offered not just email but context, calendar, storage services, and so forth, was this AWS-based service, by the way, that you had to pump your email through. So in other words, your email would go into whatever account you had, would shoot up to AWS, and it would come back down to the app. And the AWS, the service they had up in AWS, which was Focused Inbox, would divide your email into important and non-important. And so the important email would be like, you know, email from Mary Jo, email from Leo. Non-important email would be email from Brad. No, it would be, you know, mailing lists or, you know, whatever. And you could make it work better over time by saying, no, this isn't important, or yes, this is important. Mm-hmm. And you'd have like a focused view and an other view or whatever. So Microsoft bought Acompli, turned it into Outlook Mobile. And of course, a lot of businesses were like, we can't use this app because we can't send our email through a third-party service. Mm-hmm. And I believe, Mary Jo, you probably know this, I think it's based on Azure now, right? Isn't it off of Amazon?
I think they got it off, yeah.
So you can federate your infrastructure to like a Azure AD up in the cloud. It'll be safe and secure for businesses if you want to do that. I think that's how that works. But for individuals, it's, you know, whatever, it's straight Azure. And it's kind of a cool feature. Or for the other 50% of the world who hates this, you can just turn it off. Anyway.
Yay, that's me.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people don't like it. Yeah. So for Outlook at Microsoft, which is, you know, its products are legion. There's Outlook.com, there's Outlook on the web, there's Outlook 2016 on both Windows and Mac. There's the Mail app in Windows and on Windows 10 Mobile. And then there's the Outlook mobile app, which is on Android and iOS. Okay. So they're trying to make these things look and work more like each other. And over time, Focus Inbox has come to all of those other Outlooks, except for the Windows Mail app, which is part of Windows 10. And that's what's changing this month. Some people were testing it privately. They've expanded that group pretty dramatically. Even in the public build, the shipping build of Windows 10, if you go into the Mail app, go into Settings, go to Reading, way down at the bottom, you will see an item down there for Focused Inbox. It has to be enabled in your account, which is how they're limiting its access. So for me, I don't have access to it yet anywhere because the accounts I would use with Windows Mail have not been enabled for this. But it's coming anytime now. So I think by the time the Creators Update is out, it's probably fair to say this thing will be generally available basically in every Outlook that there is, if that makes sense.
Okay.
So this
Do you know they delayed it? They delayed the rollout in many of these versions.
Oh, I did not know that. Okay.
Yeah. So on the Mac, happened like in January, they acknowledged this, and they said on the Mac, rollout will be 6 to 8 weeks after first release completes on Office 365. On Outlook.com, that they are now saying it won't happen until April, I believe, for people. Okay. Yeah.
Well,
so,
I got so excited there.
I know. But the version you're talking about is the one that's built into Windows 10.
Yes.
On PCs, right? So that one is happening.
It's
Windows 10
happening.
Mobile, yeah, also delayed.
So I think the thing that's notable about this, although I didn't know anything that you, that stuff you just said was new to me, but they talked about this last year, and they talked about a schedule. And whatever the schedule was at the time, it could have changed, obviously. But they kind of laid it out for every single version of Outlook, except for the Mail app in Windows 10. They didn't even mention it. And so, of course, a lot of people are like, wait, what's going on with this? I mean, this is the one I use. So it is actually happening right now. That's pretty cool. In fact, I should look at it now. I would imagine it's possible.
I just sent you the new schedule. The schedule got pushed back for quite a few people.
Yeah, it says this setting can't be applied to any of your accounts. But it's there. I mean, the feature's in there. I just can't access it.
Yeah, yeah. You know, the only reason I don't love this feature is I feel like I don't get enough mail to make it worth it for me. I think if you get a ton of mail, it's probably worth turning this on. But for me, I noticed when it was on, the mail, I was missing some mail, and it was in my, what do they call it, your junk folder or whatever?
The other folder, yeah.
Yeah. Right. And so I'm like
it never really learns. And that's the problem. Right. If you just glance your email, which I do, like you probably like basically all day long.
Yeah.
What it gives you is two places to look, you know, because you can't, especially at first, you're not going to trust it.
I know.
So you have to look in both places and it just becomes maybe more of a.
Right. And if you don't trust it, then it can't learn. So it stays bad. Like it never improves. Right. So
yeah,
I don't know. You can turn it off. And I do.
Yeah. A lot of people do. Like Brad does too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's nice to have options. It's nice when you can turn them off if you don't want them.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you don't have to. It's the same thing. It's very similar to this priority inbox that Google does, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. And
some people love it and some people hate it.
Yeah, right. And there's a feature consolidation happening across all these outlooks, right, which is kind of interesting. Microsoft had a anti-spam kind of thing, whose name now escapes me, that has been replaced by this clutter feature, which debuted in Exchange and is now kind of everywhere because everything's based on Exchange now. And that's been freaking people out, too, because I think people get used to the way whatever that Outlook.com feature was called.
Yeah.
Which is similar, whatever it was called.
There's also Conversation View. That's not the one you mean, right?
No, but that's another classic where it's probably split right down the middle. Some people love it and some people are like, nope. you know, they want nothing
I don't like
to do
it. I can't get used to it. But other people are like, I can't live without Conversation View, which groups your emails together that pertain to each other.
Yeah, I hate it too. Yeah.
Yeah. See, I actually like Conversation View.
Different strokes. Yeah. Everybody. Yeah. Email is about as personal an app as you can get. I mean, really.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. Yeah, so they have all this stuff, and you can turn it on and turn it off, and that's cool.
That's fair.
Yep.
That's fine.
Well, but the problem, though, over time is that they also have like 117 different Outlook clients, right? And so the features that were available in each were kind of up and down. And what we've seen since the Acompli team came over and basically took over Outlook is that they're kind of smoothing that out. And so it sounds like the schedule has been pushed back, which is too bad. But at least they're doing that. And the theory should be that if you choose to use Windows Mail on the desktop, or maybe you just use the web client, or you go to mobile and you're using an iPhone or whatever, it shouldn't matter. Like you should have the same choice of features where they make sense, right, across all of those clients. Right. And they should look and work similarly. And it seems like they're doing a good job of making that happen. It's going to take a while, but they are moving in that direction.
Cloud? Cloudy?
Oh, wait a minute.
No. Insider builds. You want to do that?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Donna Sarkar just tweeted today there are no Windows 10 insider builds today, but she didn't say there wouldn't be any later this week, which I bet there will.
None today, but some tomorrow.
They're working on dynamic lock.
we've got priorities.
Hopefully dynamic.
But they're getting close to the thing they hate to call RTM. So they had the bug bash over the weekend, and they're trying to get the last things resolved before they declare it done. Which they won't officially say because they don't want to say it ever RTMs. It never does in their words. So, but it will. So,
Sorry. Ye of little faith.
It's so dry. during the winter.
Let's talk about the cloud. Amazon.
Yeah.
What do they call it? Hive?
Chime.
Leah, you might want to look into this.
No, yeah, I actually immediately said we should look into this. That's what I said.
Yep. Yeah. AWS now, Amazon Web Services, has a thing that is competing with Skype for Business and WebEx and GoToMeeting, some of these other products. It's called Chime. They announced it this week. So they call it their unified communication service. And they are selling a basic edition that's free, a plus edition for $250 a month per user, and a pro edition for $15 a month. So if you're wondering, why is Amazon doing this? Amazon's trying to do what Microsoft and Google are doing, which is not just sell infrastructure as a service, you know, where you can put your stuff in a virtual machine. They want to have business services that you buy from them too, and that you buy on a subscription basis. So this joins some other services they have. They have Work Docs and Work Mail, productivity services on AWS. So here's another one, the Chime service.
Let me ask you a question about this because
yes.
We have not just we specifically us, but we collectively just as a industry have watched as Microsoft and Google have tried to attack AWS with their own similar cloud services, like it's kind of infrastructure services,
right?
Plumbing essentially. And so far they haven't been super successful. It's not that they haven't created their own businesses. I mean, Azure is obviously a big deal and Google is not, but whatever, but they're trying. It's weird to me. It's at least for me. And the question really is whether to you, this occurred to you that we've really never had a discussion about Amazon attacking the same thing from the other direction. In other words, they have this infrastructure service. What they don't have are the end user business services that kind of sit on top of that, which is what Microsoft and Google both do have. So when they announced this, my first reaction was, this is really surprising. I never saw this coming. But my second thought was, why did I never see this coming?
Right.
You know, retrospectively, it's so obvious.
Yeah.
You know, they don't want to just be plumbing, just like Verizon doesn't want to just be plumbing.
No.
You know?
Right.
Hey, before you, one thing about AWS, they should mention on this show, they are a sponsor, believe it or not. So a little disclaimer there, AWS is a sponsor, but I still want to use this thing, this service.
If you think about this, Microsoft and Amazon came at the cloud from two totally different ways. When Amazon came at the cloud, they were there first, right? They were there like 7 years before anybody else really was. And they started out as an infrastructure as a service provider because they had all this cloud capacity and they're like, hey, we built all this cloud stuff for our commerce business, so we should make some more money on it and you know, basically get users to host their stuff in our cloud. Microsoft, when they built Azure, came at it the opposite way. So they're like, oh, we have all this business software, so let's build a platform as a service and make it for people who want to build their apps from scratch and make them completely cloud first from the get-go. And it wasn't that successful for Microsoft at the beginning. So then they added the infrastructure as a service. So it's like the two of them came at it from opposite ends. And now they're going to go head to head.
Yeah. I mean, you just mentioned Workmail. Is that what you said?
Yeah. It's called... I know. I don't know their services as well as I know Microsoft.
I've never heard of it. I've just never heard of it.
WorkDocs and Workmail. Yep.
Okay. So these are obviously email and web-based document, whatever. I have never heard of those services.
They're new.
Yeah.
They're pretty new. They're just starting to try to establish themselves in these spaces. So they're not as well-known as things like Google Docs, right?
Yeah. AWS is so well-regarded. So well-regarded, right? You have to think this stuff is probably going to do okay. It's very interesting. Like, I mean, I don't know that, you know, Microsoft has been fighting kind of a two-pronged battle. They've got the productivity end where they're going after Google and vice versa. And then they have that infrastructure part where they were kind of going after or are going after Amazon. Well, surprise, you know, it's this two front war is being fought in both directions.
Yep.
And that's really interesting. And again, I feel somewhat dumb that this never occurred to me that this would happen.
Yeah, I guess if you think about it, if you're the vendor, right, you're like, okay, I've saturated the infrastructure as a service market. Like we've sold the heck out of this and we're doing really well. Where can we get some more incremental value? Well, we're not really doing anything in the business software / productivity enterprise space. So let's try to go get some of that.
And they must see the businesses that are built off their services and how gangbusters some of them are going.
Right.
And the thought must be, we should get part of this. They're just piggybacking on us. Let's just do this ourselves.
Yeah, totally.
It's interesting.
Yep. And that dovetails into the other cloud thing that I put in the show notes. So this is an interesting thing that Microsoft's doing that I don't believe either Amazon or Google is doing this as well, but I'm not positive. But I remember 2 years ago when I was talking to Mark Rusinovich, who's the CTO of Azure, he started talking to me about Microsoft's idea of they wanted to blur the lines between IaaS and PaaS, you know, infrastructure and platform. And I was like, I don't know what that means, but yeah, sounds great, right?
My reaction to everything Azure. Yeah, yes.
Right. So I never really understood what that meant until they started rolling out some of the services that are doing this. And what it meant was they're going to take some of the platform as a service capabilities that they have for people who are building brand new apps on Azure, and they're going to bring those services to people who are only using IaaS, their VMs on Azure. So one of the first things they brought over was a service called Virtual Machine Scale Sets. They announced this last year, and I was like, oh, yeah, whatever. Okay, let's users create thousands of identical virtual machines so they can scale their big jobs quicker if they want to use IaaS. I'm like, yeah, okay. Now they're starting to roll out more of these things. So last week they talked about managed disks as another service that they took from their platform as a service, and they're making it available to people who are only using infrastructure as a service, not only, but like also using. And in their blog post about this, they said, this is just the start, right? Like now we're going to take a whole bunch of the stuff we did as platform as a service and make them available to IaaS customers. So they were going to bring over patching support, application application lifecycle integration, health monitoring, load balancing, all these things are going to be available to you whether you use platform as a service or infrastructure as a service. I think this is going to be really big for customers because some of them only want to be in the IaaS part of Microsoft's cloud. Some have things in both sides, and it looks and works better if you have the same services available to you, whichever part of the cloud you're using. It fits in with their whole hybrid play, right? So I think this could be something that distinguishes them from the other cloud players, but I'm not 100% sure if either Amazon or Google is trying this too. So I think it's interesting though, because it's something I remember Mark's talking to me about 2 years ago, and I'm like, but what does that mean? Blurring the lines. Okay, like, what are you trying to do? I don't get it. And I wasn't sure if he meant, I just didn't know. I kind of was at a loss. And the more I asked him to explain it, even though he's a great guy for explaining things, I was just getting more lost. So now we kind of have a clearer picture of this, I think. And I think it's a pretty interesting play and a way, I think, for Microsoft, too, to take people who have been very kind of skeptical of the cloud and only kind of dipping their toes in the virtual machines to convince them, hey, you tried this capability here, but we have it over in the platform as a service too. So it's almost like a bridge to get them to try both parts of their cloud and maybe ultimately go PaaS. Jesus.
Hey, Mikey, he likes it.
I need a whiteboard. I don't know what I would do.
Oh, we used to have a little small whiteboard, you know, just one you could hold up like that, and you could draw. Yeah. And you'd have to draw really small.
Be like cloud, PaaS,
or
IaaS.
If you only had like some sort of device that you could tablet.
I know.
And draw.
I know. I've asked you who this person was at least 100 times, but that guy that was on, I think the site or maybe Tech TV in the early days.
Oh, Cliff Stoll. Yeah, he was so great. He'd draw on his monitor.
Yeah, on his Mac monitor. Every time he did it, I was like, you know, because he was using dry erase markers, but it looked like he was putting a Sharpie on the screen, and it was just always
so
awful.
He was a physics professor, I think. So that's the kind of thing physics professors do.
Yeah, he was an insane person in the off season.
Even on the on season. All right, Xbox. We got some big Xbox news.
Yes, we do.
Record sales. Record
sales. Record January for Microsoft still came in second place. It's unbelievable. The thing that confuses me here, aside from the obvious, is the PlayStation 4 is fine. There's nothing wrong with it, but it's not twice as good as the Xbox One. They're roughly the same. And if this thing was split 60-40, I'd be okay with that. The fact that the PlayStation 4 is outselling Xbox One by over 2-1 is just confusing to me. They've clearly sold somewhere in the 25 million-ish range. So it's not like this thing isn't selling well. In fact, it's selling better than the Xbox 360 did at this point in its own life cycle. So it's not like it's not a success. But it's weird how this sales disparity has been hanging over our head, so to speak, basically the entire time the Xbox One has been out. And it just continued in January. So this is obviously going to be a big year for the Xbox. There's a thing later in the notes here about an E3 briefing that Microsoft is having on Sunday, June 11th, where there's a picture of what is the Scorpio logic board. So
that's
clearly
exciting.
This is...
Yeah, I want to know more about Scorpio. Scorpio, what they said was this summer?
Probably more like holiday season.
Holidays. Oh, okay.
Yeah. I mean, Xbox One S launched in August, so I suppose earlier than the holidays would be possible. In fact, that would be really nice, but I would think the holidays, you know.
Don't you think the name Scorpio implies, you know, late October?
When is Scorpio?
November.
Scorpio. Oh, see,
It's technically, I think it's probably November now.
It's our new segment, Ask the Astrologer.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. How do you astrology feel about the pick Scorpio's of the week?
Yeah. Well, Scorpios can be a picky kind of a game console.
Yeah, it's true. They didn't call it Scorpion.
Yeah, it is Scorpio. Yeah. And they'll never use that name because they always use terrible names. So we'll see what they call it.
Yeah.
Hopefully they call it the Xbox One 2. That would be hilarious. I bet they call it something like Xbox One.
Xbox 10.
Xbox 10, yeah.
Doesn't that make sense?
Just brace yourself.
It would be smart to wait till September because I did just buy the 1S, and you got to give me a little time to amortize my investment. Mm-hmm.
Fair.
I'm not like Paul where I have 18 Xboxes.
I do have 3 Xbox ones in my house right now.
Ridiculous.
I'd have 4, but my son is away at college.
He took one.
I know. Little bastard. Anyway, so... You'd probably kill me now with his bare hands. Anyway, this a small it. Note. Call of Duty, best-selling game in the world.
Yep. You mean Call of Duty?
Call of Duty. Yeah, I was interested to see, you know, I've had bad reactions, or as I call them, visceral reactions, to two of the recent Call of Duty games. And this last one, I don't even play it. I play the Modern Warfare Remastered, and apparently I'm not alone. So... they're going to go back to the basics for the next version of the game. So maybe Mary Jo could, be
Let's
interested.
Let's not press
again.
Our luck here.
I still have a dream that someday I will be sniped from some hidden location and I'll look down to see what it was and it'll say Mary Jo.
Hey, I'm watching Twitter live right now and there's an ad for an HP Elite phone.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Apparently the Twitter live stream is currently being run by something called Cheddar.
Yeah.
Cheddar.
I know. I've heard of that.
Cheddar. Yeah. It's like a news channel. I don't get it. Cheddar. Oh, now they're doing oh, no, this is the news. We're back to the news. I thought it was a Vive ad.
Oh, are you looking at like the...
You know, when you go happening? To Twitter now, if you go to the front page of Twitter, you get a live stream.
Yeah. Everyone wants to be Facebook.
Oh, God. I don't want it. Facebook just announced that they're going to have video... play audio when
automatic
you go there.
Automatic playing. Oh, God, the worst.
Hooray.
I think, having read the report, it's only on mobile. So, but they didn't say that, but I think I'm correctly interpreting it. That's just when you're using your phone.
Mm.
Okay. So dopey. Dopey.
I have a very visceral. Relationship.
Sorry to sound like, you know, like a little bit like... what was that guy's name?
Oh, that awesome guy that used to be at the roast that was always supposedly drunk.
Dean Martin. Oh, Foster Brooks, who just passed.
No, Foster Brooks. Thank you. He was amazing.
Actually, he didn't just pass. Erwin Corey just passed.
Yeah.
I confused Foster Brooks and Erwin Corey. Same generation. Regulars on Johnny Carson.
Yeah, those are the best.
Those are the days. COD going back to basics. Okay, and then June 11th. That's it.
Yep.
Hey,
that's it.
Hey, we've
seen it quick. It was
we're ready for
painless.
The back of the book. It's the end of the Xbox segment. Mary Jo, wake up. Wake up.
I'm awake.
I'm making waffles. I want to talk a little bit before we get on to the back of the book about Amazon Web Services. I shouldn't have to really say much about AWS. Everybody knows AWS. But if you don't, let me just prod you a little bit. It's a robust, scalable platform. We use it. I use it all the time that helps builders of all kinds, all sizes, innovate quickly. Twice the compliance certifications, the largest global footprint, global of any other cloud vendor. And what's great is they do all the heavy infrastructure lifting so you could focus on the thing you want to do. And I always tell the story, but I know so many people who, you know, in the late part of the century or early part of the 2000s, we're starting up, you know, something, an app or a web page or like Kevin Rose is starting Dig. And in those days, man, it was a pain. You had to go, you know, rent a server. He had a colo. So he had a network operations center where you buy your own hardware. So he bought this big old server. And I remember him so excited installing this thing. And you look back on this and you go, man, how did we survive? Now you literally just, you know, go online, flip a switch, and bada bing, bada boom. And you AWS, you've got everything you could need. And they release new features all the time. In fact, a faster rate than anyone else. 1,000 new features last year alone. Services support virtually any cloud workload, more than 70 of them, to range from compute and storage and networking and database and analytics, application services, deployment management, mobile. Almost everybody uses, you know, back-end, like for your mobile app, image servers, that kind of thing. It's amazing what you can do. We use, actually, AWS as a front-end to give us load balancing and DDoS protection. It's just Amazon's storage solutions are designed, as you know, to deliver secure, scalable, durable storage for businesses of any size. If you want to achieve efficiency and scalability within their backup and recovery environments without the need for an on-prem infrastructure, that's kind of the whole point of AWS. Do all the stuff you would do on-prem on their servers. Make life easier. Podcast.aws. They have a podcast. Of course they do. Talking about AWS. You can listen and learn about AWS. And it is totally global, man. I mean, they're the widest global reach of any cloud provider. You could choose the region your data resides in, so you minimize latency and costs. And nowadays, you know, regulatory requirements mean sometimes you have to have a server in specific regions or countries. You got it. You got complete control of your data. With AWS, startups scale like enterprises, and enterprises can be nimble as startups. Whether you're new to AWS or you've already used it, as most of us have, they want to give you all the information you need to support your success and help you do amazing things. Learn more at podcast.aws. Podcast.aws. Amazon Web Services, we thank them so much for not only their support of this show, but, you know, changing how work gets done over the last decade. We're talking Windows. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley, and it's time for what we call the back of the book. Paul Thurrott will start it off with his tip of the week.
Yeah, I had a reader email me last week and say, hey, I know that Windows To Go is a feature only of Windows 10 Enterprise, but if you look in Windows 10 Pro, it's there. Did Microsoft change their policy for this? You know, what's going on? And so Windows To Go is that feature where you can install Windows 10 onto a USB key as a like a portable OS, like you can do with Linux or whatever. It is a perk of Windows 10 Enterprise. You need to have a Windows 10 Enterprise license to use this. And to my knowledge, Microsoft had never changed its policy with regards to that. So I asked, and then I waited, and I asked, and I waited, and they kept sending me information about the feature, which I already knew, and didn't really answer the question. So I had Raphael look at it, and we've developed a theory between us and the reader, actually, that Microsoft, this is a mistake, that it is, in fact, available in Windows 10 Pro. You do still need Enterprise, meaning you can't make a portable version of Windows 10 Pro. It's possible that if it was done on purpose, it's because enterprises have mixed environments where some computers will be on Enterprise, some will be on Pro, and they just wanted to make sure everyone could make the key. But the other details of this haven't changed, meaning it only works with certain types of specially formulated USB keys. There's literally a small list of devices that work. They tend to be more expensive than typical USB keys. And you can only apply Windows 10 Enterprise to it, so you need a license for that, which, of course, no individuals have. So if you have Windows 10 Pro and you go into the control panel and you search for Windows To Go, you will see it there. You will not be able to use it. So, however, if you need to use this in a business, do know that you can create these disks using Windows 10 Pro as well as Enterprise. And just a quick note, I wrote a story today about Verizon's new unlimited data plans. I'm not going to be switching to Verizon, but I do find it very interesting that as kind of an ongoing trend, the big wireless carriers in the United States, meaning AT&T and Verizon, have pretty consistently been following along as T-Mobile and Sprint and even things like Google Project Fi have introduced these kind of innovative new features, like in, you know, international plans that are fairly inexpensive and that kind of thing. And Verizon this week basically did the pigs fly kind of thing, and they brought back their unlimited data plan, and it's actually a pretty good deal. And it's, you know, they have that kind of high end throttling thing like everyone does, but basically you have to use like 22 gigabytes in a month before they'll potentially throttle you, and even then they probably won't. So I hate Verizon and I hate AT&T, but they're making it a little harder to hate them, I guess. So that's kind of cool.
You know, Lisa's going back to Verizon just because of this, because she's been on T-Mobile.
Yeah, I looked at it. The rest of my family is on Verizon, and we have four users on, because Steph, my wife's parents are on there too. And I told her, if you have four users, the cost of this plan is $45 per month per user. I said, you might want to look at your last couple of bills and do the math on this, because whatever their data allotment is, it's a hard limit. So if you can go unlimited and not have to worry about it, especially with my son, yeah, who tends to abuse data like, you know, like a teenager.
I'm sticking with T-Mobile. I think it's still the best deal if the connection is good. You know, if they have good service where you are, I think T-Mobile
is.
And what's interesting is they're responding to Verizon by improving, you know, by giving you tethering and stuff. And so it's really interesting.
It kind of works both
competition's
ways, yeah.
Great, you know?
Yep. Yeah, you can see it right. I know, it's amazing. So I always think back to that first summer when the iPhone came out and I switched to AT&T, and it was like 2G Edge kind of connectivity. Not Edge. Edge? Edge?
Was it called Edge? Yeah.
Yeah, Edge.
It's 2G.
And we went to France that summer, and I was afraid to turn it on because the iPhone didn't even have a sense of like roaming, international.
Thousands of dollars.
And people were coming home with $2,700 bills, you know, and not to mention you get a paper bill in the mail that was like half a foot tall. So
yeah, Justine made her name opening her first iPhone bill.
So things have changed. And that's, you know, it's neat. So anyway, Verizon's still the devil, but but good for them. So
but they're a cheaper devil Verizon, now. That's good.
Yes, yeah. So that's
good. Unlimited devil tree.
The unlimited devil, yeah. And then the app pick of the week. This is a Microsoft Garage app that kind of just silently appeared this week. It's a little goofy. It's called Email Insights. It's actually a Windows Store app. This should quell some of the complaints we've seen lately about Garage apps only being on Android and iOS. It connects to either Gmail or Outlook 2016. And what it basically does is it works like, what's it called? Spotlight in Mac OS X, where you kind of hit the Command spacebar and the thing comes up in the middle of the screen. It works like that, except it does instant email searching, and it's supposed to offer like dramatically better and faster search than what's available, especially in Outlook, which, you know, is a Microsoft problem. I do use Gmail, so I tried this, and I honestly think Gmail web-based searching is fantastic. So I don't really see the point of this. But if you are using Outlook on Windows, meaning Outlook 2016, you might want to look at this, because Outlook is terrible and you should not be using Outlook 2016 on Windows, but I know you are. So this is much better searching than what's available in Outlook. And hopefully this technology will kind of make its way from Microsoft Research, which is what this is, to Outlook, you know, somewhere down the road. Or they just get rid of Outlook. Either way would be fine.
Come on.
Boy, I didn't know
an Outlook hater?
No kidding. I didn't know you had this.
Outlook 2016. The funny thing is, everything else that's called Outlook, I actually really like. Outlook
Except
Mobile
the
is
real
fantastic.
Outlook client?
Mm. Yep. Outlook.com is great. Outlook on the web is great. Mm. Outlook 2016, it makes me want to gouge out my eyeballs. Yeah. It's terrible.
I've actually always felt that way, but
it's just too much. It's just so much stuff for something that should be streamlined and simple.
Yeah. Just depends what you want.
Yeah.
What you're looking for.
I want something that works.
That's silly. Why would you want that? Time for the Enterprise Pick of the Week.
Yes, Enterprise Pick of the Week this week is Azure Stack. Azure Stack is the version of Azure that customers are going to be able to run in their own data centers so that they can deliver Azure services from their data centers, not from Microsoft's. And up until, I think it was early this week, Microsoft had kind of had a reset of their strategy with Azure Stack, and they said, instead of letting you bring your own hardware, we're going to just pick three server vendors and we're going to make their machines into appliances, and that's how we're going to sell you Azure Stack when it comes out later this year. So a lot of people were grumbling about that and saying, oh, only HPE or Dell or Lenovo, no other servers. Well, they've just added a fourth. So now that you can also opt for Cisco's Unified Computing System, UCS, as the fourth option when Azure Stack comes out. Right now, Azure Stack's in preview 2, and Microsoft had said that Azure Stack will be out. Well, at first it was supposed to be out last year. Now it's supposed to be out sometime in 2017, around mid-year, I believe. But Cisco said their server preloaded with Azure Stack will be out sometime between Q3 and Q4 of 2017. So I'm guessing that's the new timing for Azure Stack. But the good news is you have four choices instead of three. Azure Stack still coming this year. That's the enterprise pick.
And do you have a code name for us to name?
I do. And I want to hear Paul's take on this code name, because this is a weird code name in that a lot of people disagree what this is the code name for. So this week is .NET's 15th anniversary.
What, really?
.NET's been out 15 years.
Wow.
Yep.
So I was trying to find the code name for the very first version of .NET. And I did a lot of searching around the web, and I saw some people say it was Lightning, and I saw some people say it was Project 42, and I saw some people say it was both of those things.
I don't recall either of those. I do recall that other thing that you have here.
Yep. So Project 42, well, and then some people called it NGWS, Next Generation Windows Services.
Yeah, that was definitely a thing.
That was a thing, yep.
Oh, yeah. So yeah, no, that's...
You remember Project 42, right? Like, I remember this being a code name for Microsoft back in the day. And a lot of people assumed that 42 was from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. You know, the answer to the ultimate question of life, universe, and everything is 42. And that's why they made that the code name. But then other people said the reason it was 42 was because Microsoft's developer division was in Building 42 on the Microsoft campus. Or maybe it was both.
But what? Yeah, why was it Building 42? Was it the 42nd building?
Oh, man. Have you? Well, Microsoft building numbers on their campus are a nightmare.
I was going to say, please don't pretend that makes any sense. Sequential. I wasn't sure what you were going to say. Yeah. But, okay.
They're not sequential. Yeah. There are buildings missing. There are buildings next to each other that are totally different numbers. So unless you have a map like I do, a secret treasure map,
it's
tough to get around.
So yeah, I will say this. I have multiple examples of me writing about NGWS. I have nothing about those other things.
Yeah, I remember Project 42. I think Lightning, some people also said was the codename for Com Plus. Some people said it was the codename for CLR. We need Raymond Chen, basically, to tell us what the real meaning of these codenames were. I feel like I should know, too. So if anybody who's listening knows for sure what the original codename was for .NET Framework 1.0, we would love to know. Because that is what I wanted to make the codename pick of the week. But you got some others in there. Lightning, Project 42, and GWS. A mishmash.
Speaking of Raymond Chen.
Yes.
Yeah. Did you read his most recent blog post? Oh, no, this one's from November. This is an old one.
I was going to say, the most recent one was going to bore us all to death.
Yeah, this housing downturn is hitting. No, not that one. the one about William, the customer service rep. It was. I guess I just saw it on Hacker News or Reddit or somewhere. Yeah. And that's why I'm aware of it. But now that I look at the date, it's November 23rd, 2009. So you guys, this is old. You've seen this all before. But it was
if anyone, he has a great blog. It's called The Old New Thing, if you haven't read it before.
So what he just talks about all sorts of Microsoft-y kind of.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a lot of little neat internal bits, you know.
He's like the unofficial or maybe even the official historian for Microsoft. He knows everything.
I'm sorry. I've been researching this NGWS thing. Do you remember Windows Distributed Internet Applications 2000 or WinDNA 2000?
Yeah, I do remember that.
I forgot about this. It's amazing how much stuff.
So crazy. I guess since everybody, this is such an old post.
No, which one? Which one was it?
Can I talk to that William fellow? He was so helpful.
I don't remember that one.
So in 1989,
Bill Gates was being taken on a guided tour of the product support department's new office building. And during his visit, he said, "Hey, you mind if I take this call?" So
that's
Bill,
awesome.
This is Raymond writing. Bill puts on a headset, sits down, and answers the phone. "Hello, this is Microsoft Product Support. William speaking. How can I help you?" Bill talks with the customer, collects the details of the problem, searches in the product support knowledge base, sifts through the search results, finds the solution, and patiently walks the customer through fixing the problem. The customer is thrilled that William was able to fix the problem so quickly and with such a pleasant attitude. Bill wraps up the call and thank you That's for using great. Microsoft products. At no point did Bill identify himself as anything other than William. The customer had no idea the product support engineer who took the call was Bill Gates. But the story doesn't end there. Everybody in the department, you know, within days knows that the time Bill took a product support call. Sometime later, the same customer calls back and says, "Hi, I called you folks with a problem some time ago, and I talked to a nice guy named William who straightened it all out. I have another question. Can I speak with William?"
Awesome.
Product support engineer says, "Okay, let me see if William's available." Brings up the customer's service record, looks at the name of the support engineer who entered the earlier call, and it's Bill G.
That's amazing.
Sorry, but William's not available right now. His friends call him Bill, by the way. The person who helped you last time, that was Bill Gates. The customer goes, "Oh my God." Kind of a nice story. Now that it's from Raymond Chen, that, you know, that's very credible, right? I'm sure it happened.
Yeah.
But that's not unusual. CEOs often take customer support calls.
Mary Jo, you've sent me down a rabbit hole.
Uh-oh. Sorry.
Have you found more?
I didn't write this, but in the year 2000 at Windows IT Pro, we were, of course, trying to figure out what the heck .NET was, right? And everyone was writing all this stuff about DLL hell and XML, new to us at the time. And this notion that you'd be able to install snippets of code over the internet and run them on your computer. Mm-hmm. It was all very exciting and different and new. But listen to what Christer Andersen, who, by the way, now works for Microsoft, wrote in the year 2000 as part of this story about .NET. She said, "XML applications will not replace Windows applications anytime soon. Inertia, if nothing else, will prevent that. People are used to Windows applications. Developers are used to developing for Windows and very reasonably don't like the idea of starting over with a new platform. It's just too early to tell how well XML applications will stand up to wide-scale deployment." This is literally the problem we are having right now with the Windows Store, which is what those things are, XML applications. Right?
Yep. Yep.
That's amazing.
Wow.
That was 17 years ago.
Some things never change. Yep.
17 years ago.
Wow.
Incredible.
All right. I think we've all earned a little stein of something.
Yeah. And she finally picked a good beer. Sorry, that sounded like
finally.
Finally.
I've been trying to have mercy on you because you haven't been drinking beer, but sorry
this
for this beer.
This is clearly a hop-free beer.
I've been checking in little dollops of beer, like some of them have a beer, and I'll put like a little Dixie cup on it.
And you check it in? You shouldn't check it in unless it's at least a pint.
This is what I got.
That's all you can do now. So this week, it's a big beer. That's the beer pick of the week. It's from Nebraska Brewing in Papillon, Nebraska.
Nice.
They are a really great brewery if you've never had anything from Nebraska Brewing. And they make a barley wine called Fathead. Probably because you get never a fat head if you drink too much of it. This beer is not light. It's 12%. It's a Scotch ale aged 6 months in whiskey barrels. I got to have some last week. If you like butterscotch, it tastes just like butterscotch. That is exactly
what I can't consume in one bottle.
What?
They put brown sugar in it to boost the alcohol content. So that gives it a very caramely, molasses-y
Does it have like a sugar grain feel to it all? Like
no, it doesn't. It's very smooth.
Yeah. You mean like graininess?
Yeah, there's some barley wines are so sugary.
Yeah,
you get the texture of sugar grains in the liquid.
Yeah, I don't love that.
Mm-mm. Yeah,
mm-mm. Yeah. But yeah, low on the IBUs, so not very hoppy. It does have some hops, but mostly this is just a delicious dark heavy winter beer. It's good.
And it's fat head.
And I could, if I even tasted that, I'd probably go into like a metabolic shock.
You might. I know.
I haven't.
You haven't had really any carbs in a long time?
Not beyond incidental carbs. I mean,
good for you.
It like 2.5 months.
How's that been? It's good, right?
Well, you know, it's hell. Is how it's
you don't miss it.
No,
come on.
No, it's okay.
You
actually,
don't miss
the funny
it.
Thing is, I actually eat a lot less. Like, I
sugar makes you eat more. Sugar makes you eat more.
It's really interesting.
And and once you don't eat it for a while, then you have something with sugar. It's like, whoa, that is sweet.
I remember that from before. I haven't had anything sugary, but this beer would kill me. There's no doubt about it.
It would. Sorry.
But I love barley. Barley wine beers, those are basically my favorite kind of beer.
I love them too. I agree. Yeah, they're delish.
The source of all my problems.
All right, kids. go have some butterscotch flavored beer and
yum.
We'll see you in a week.
Have a little piece of steak.
Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley, thank you for being here. Paul and Mary Jo are, of course, the premier Windows and Microsoft journalists in the world. You'll find Mary Jo Foley at allaboutmicrosoft.com. That's her blog, a ZDNet blog. Paul Thurrott, you'll find at his website, thurott.com, or on his book site, leanpub.com. And, of course, they both appear here every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time. What would that be? That'd be 1900 UTC if you want to tune in and watch live and join us in the chat room at irc.twit.tv. We'd love to have you. Otherwise, though, you can get the on-demand versions, too. We have audio and video, and that's available wherever you get your podcasts. If you want to just do it from our website, twit.tv/ww. But we're on YouTube and Stitcher and Slacker and Google and, everywhere. Just subscribe. That way you won't miss an episode. And we will see you for episode 506 next week on Windows Weekly. Bye-bye.